Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 46 of Season 12 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast, where we dig our way through the 1994 film The Shawshank Redemption, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me this week is Josh Horowitz of 5 Minutes of Trouble, 5 Minutes of Banzai, and 12 Chimes, It's Midnight. Welcome back once again for another season, Josh.
I'm back. Thanks for inviting me, Rob. It's always fun to talk movies with you and sit back in the podcasting chair.
I agree. I enjoy it too.
Yeah, no. It's kind of funny. Actually, before we start, I haven't been doing podcasting regularly, but we're starting to do some 5 Minutes of Trouble stuff again.
Ooh.
So I'll talk about that a little bit more after we get through the minutes.
Oh,
but,
wow.
Big Trouble Little China fans, this is the 40th anniversary of the film, so we got some stuff to talk about.
All right. I'm looking forward to hearing about that, too. But first, I want to actually hear about your history with the movie The Shawshank Redemption. Do you remember when you first saw it? Is it something that you watch often? Is it among your favorites? Is it not? You know, what can you tell me about Josh Horowitz's history with Horrible Horowitz's history with Shawshank?
What, other than my almost becoming a cop, and I can tell you that one thing that did influence me, I'll bet, there was a time when I was thinking about going into the police, and some people were saying, oh, well, you know, why do police? Why not try California Highway Patrol? But the problem with that one, while I like the idea of doing stuff in cars, is that, well, yeah, chips, yeah, sure, but they're part of the sheriff's department, and in order to become part of the sheriff's department, instead of doing, like, you know, beat cop work for your first couple of years, you have to work in jails. And after seeing this movie, I didn't want to do it. Just not appealing at all. And so that was a hard no, that kept me from even pursuing that line of work. But this is quite a hard-hitting film. I'm trying to remember if I actually saw this one in theaters or just rented it on video. I'm going to say it was probably a rental. Because back when this was out, I don't know if I went to go see the hard-hitting movies as much. Like, I would generally be more attracted to your comedies, your sci-fi stuff, and I would leave the harder stuff for when I could just watch it
for later in life.
Yeah. I definitely read a lot of Stephen King novels. I never read this one as a novel, or I don't know if it was a novella. It was, yeah. And many of the adaptations that Stephen King would do, you know, I knew it was going to be definitely different, definitely special. One of my favorites being Stand By Me. But this one, yeah, I mean, great performances, man. Anytime you get Morgan Freeman in a film, especially when he narrates it, you know it's going to be pretty good. It's one where I hadn't seen this in quite a while, and I was happy to see some familiar faces that I had talked about on a podcast recently. We're going to see Clancy Brown in the scenes and the minutes we're mm-hmm. talking about here, and he plays Rawhide in Buckaroo Banzai. He seems around the same youthful age when he's doing this, though. This was a couple years later.
Years later. Wait, Banzai came out in what year? In 80?
I want to say that was 84.
10 years later. Okay.
Yeah, but he still looks young. I mean, very, very different, different character. Not a very friendly guy.
But he's very memorable in this movie. And he's got a lot of very memorable lines.
Oh, yes.
No question about that. Okay, great. That is excellent. So minute 46 begins with Boggs enlightening the moment and ends with Red having an encouraging idea. So we left things on Friday with Boggs getting out of the hole after he basically beat Andy almost to death. And, you know, he was on his way back to his cell. he, flicked off his cigarette and then enters his cell. And as he's entering the cell, he turns on
And
the light. Surprise, surprise,
surprise.
exactly. And he is surprised by Hadley, who's just standing there.
Right.
He looks like one of the what are they called? The those British the British guards that they say that work in the Tower of London that you can't what are they called? The Beefeaters. He looks like he's standing completely still, just staring at Bob.
Well, he's impeccably dressed. I mean, that's the interesting thing here is that Hadley's character is very professional looking, nice, clean cut, very military. Contrast that with if these type of movies were maybe made later, they would show like he's a little rumpled or he's like unshaven to kind of hit home further the fact that he's not the nicest guy. But no, he's in pristine order, and he's about to deal out a little bit of
I just thought of this right
justice.
now. He probably, I mean, this is 1949, so he probably served in World War II, and I think he got a taste
Yeah,
of the
probably.
blood, in the army, and decided, going a little
Huh.
callback to Band of Brothers and Saving Private Ryan. That, he's a guy who actually more the Pacific than
Right.
those two, but it seems as if he enjoyed what he was doing there, and today. I'm gonna now take that to work with me. Who knows?
And I'm sure that there were many ex-soldiers who found that the police line of work or jailers
Yeah,
sort of.
that it fit them well. So at this point, he basically is just staring at Boggs, and Boggs is staring back at him. Now, I actually paused the shot right here because. You can see a book. You can see that there are two books on Boggs's shelf. You can only read the title of one of them. The other one, it's very difficult to read. As much as I tried to zoom in, you can't really see what it is. But there's a book there called Calamity Range. Have you ever heard of this novel?
I've heard of Calamity Jane, but not Calamity Range.
Okay, so it is a novel that was written by Paul Evan Lehman, Lehman, and basically the book is about it's a Western, and it's about a hero who is cornered by villains but is rescued by a woman working at the local livery stable. That's the quick. Synopsis of what the book is about. But what's really interesting is the you can think about it from the symbolism of the whole thing. Because in most movies and TV shows, the prop masters choose books to put on shelves that you're going to be able to see, even if it's just for a fraction of a second, on purpose. And I mean the theme of the book it's of the novel itself is about retribution, vendetta, poetic justice, and it's a nice way to slightly foreshadow what the payback that Boggs is about to get
Well,
from the
just
whole
the
thing.
name itself, Calamity,
That's right.
certainly evokes a strong emotion.
Exactly.
And that does reflect what's about to happen.
Yeah. So I just thought that was just really cool that I obviously I've never noticed this before. Because when you watch a movie normally, you don't look to see what books are on the shelf. It also looks like he has
Yeah, no.
a shaving kit there, and you can see on the windowsill what looks like probably aftershave, things like that. It's a little hard to tell exactly what it is, but and there's also a mirror in his cell, which also says a lot about Boggs himself. He's a very he's quite a vain character from that perspective also. So again, just
All
little
these little
props.
things.
Exactly.
I like how just before the beating is going to happen, how Hadley takes his cap off.
Oh, and he did that. He did the same thing with Fat Ass also. This is something that Hadley does. He takes off his hat before he's about to give someone a beating. It's a tell, I guess. Which goes along with what you just talked about, the fact that he is, I guess, prim and proper with the way that he's dressed.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, I'm gonna, properly take off my hat before I'm gonna go beat the crap out of somebody. That type
Right. It's
of thing.
almost as if he were acknowledging at that point that he's doing something outside of his duty as a guard,
That's right.
because a guard needs to keep his cap on, and so the minute the cap comes off, now the gloves come off as well.
That's right. That's very true. And we see that there's another guard who's standing behind them, which is Mert, played by Jude Cicadella, who we've seen before in the past also. And Hadley then takes off his hat, and Boggs looks at him and goes, "What?" And Hadley just pulls out his nightstick and bashes him in the stomach. And Boggs falls to the ground, gasping. Now, again, this is another callback to the fact of what Boggs did to Andy. Because he forced Andy, he punched him in the stomach, and Andy fell down to his knees at the same point. I mean, Hadley is obviously not going to suggest anything like what Boggs was suggesting at the time, but still, it looks as if some type of callback, the way that they're doing this whole thing.
And I like how
And
they do
then
a shot too of Boggs's face, where we can see essentially a shock of recognition after he gets hit. He realizes
that's
that,
right.
oh crap, the guards are no longer on my side.
That's right. That's right. And then Hadley just starts beating him with the stick, and then he kicks him in the face also. I mean, he does a great job here of just, and Boggs just starts trying to crawl out of the cell. And it's obviously, I think, if I remember correctly, I think on Friday they said that like everyone had to go to the mess hall or something. There was some reason why there's nobody there at this point. And Boggs is crawling out, and he grabs onto the railing to try to keep himself, to hold himself from being pulled back into the cell. And the next shot, I just love, because first we hear in the background, Mert says, "Where's he going?" And Hadley goes, "Grab his ankles." And then Boggs starts screaming, "No, no, no, help me!" And he goes, "Ah!" And again, anyone who knows Stephen King, I mean, Stephen King does horror. So this feels like a scene out of a horror movie, because just the way they drag him back into the cell, it looks as if a monster has grabbed him and pulled him in.
I mean, my notes for this minute portion is that suddenly the tormentor becomes the tormented, and it's very
That's
satisfying.
right.
I mean, now he's the one that happens to be crying and screaming for help as he gets dragged away. So, and this is a staple kind of Stephen King from the horror perspective, but also Stephen King from the justice perspective. Many of the things that he does will show justice, even in its most brutal form.
Again, that is Stephen King for us. I mean, Stephen King likes to he likes to have bullies as part of his characters, and then he loves having his bullies get their just desserts. I think I read somewhere that as a kid Stephen King was bullied, and that's why quite often in many of his novels there is some sort of bully that usually gets killed, along the way.
I like the shot of the prison hallway. Everyone's gone, devoid of guards or people, just the sounds of Boggs getting beat up. Very,
That's
very powerful scene.
right. And Mark Ralston does a great job in this as Boggs, really making us believe that he is trying to he's doing the damnedest to get away, from these guards. Even though if he were to think rationally, there is no way for him to get away from them.
That's right. Yeah,
It's
he's
not
trapped.
there's nobody who's gonna really be able to help him. Not even the other sisters if they were around. This is a no-win situation for Boggs, and I think he knows it. And then after they pull him into the cell, as you said, we just get a shot of the desolate cell block area, and we just hear the screams in the background, which and the beatings, which is also very interesting. I mean, they do this a lot in this movie, where there are scenes that we just hear what's happening, we don't see what's happening, and I mean, they did that, the last few weeks with some of the rape scenes,
Yeah, I mean, that's often the more
where the
effective
camera.
way to get the audience involved. You know, let their
That's right.
imaginations take over as to how terrible it is. And this is a staple of many classic horror films where everything is off
Yes.
stage, and then that's what makes it even more frightening.
Exactly. And, as the beatings continue, we start getting some narration from Red. And he goes, "Two things never happened again after that. The sisters never laid a finger on Andy again, and Boggs never walked again."
And you gotta love Morgan Freeman's matter-of-fact reporting of the events. You know, in
Yes.
his sort of offhand casual style, he tells it like it is, and it sort of tells us that karma's a bitch.
That's right. Definitely is. And then, as he's giving his narration, we see Boggs being wheeled out, and we see he's got a broken arm, but his other arm is still, he's still got a handcuff on there. He's still chained. This is a guy who's never going to be able to walk again, but they still have him chained up. So, he's got one handcuff on his arm, and the other handcuff is on the arm of the chair of the wheelchair.
Yeah, they
But
probably just need
we
to
don't
do
see
it due
it.
to protocol, but he's not going to
That's
mess with
right.
anybody ever again, it sounds like.
No, I don't think so. And he also has a neck brace on, which means they did a definite number on him.
Wow. Yeah, no, they mentioned
And then,
that he's going to be drinking his food through a straw.
yes.
And I found that line interesting. I was looking that up a little bit. And from what I was able to figure out, that's usually required due to either severe jaw injuries, which would make sense in his case, or swallowing disorders, which can occur due to some sort of a stroke or a brain injury. And that hit a little bit closer to home just because my wife, Lena, happens to be a speech therapist, and she works a lot with patients who deal with this. And the term is dysphagia. Or dysphagia, I forget the pronunciation. So either his jaw's broken so badly, or he got hit in the head so bad that he can't swallow anymore and's got to drink through a straw. That's pretty bad.
Right. Did you ask for her analysis on Boggs just
Oh.
by looking at the picture?
No. But if I have a chance to do that in the future, maybe I'll post that on the Facebook.
Yeah, we want a real time look at that what really happened, to Boggs. I mean, again, the makeup makes it look as if his face is a mess anyway.
Yeah.
So, but it could be either. It could be that his jaw's broken. It could be
I mean, he's
that he
very
has.
subdued, so maybe he did get a couple knocks to the head.
That's true. You never know. I mean, I guess it's one of the things that we'll just have to try to guesstimate about.
Well, I say good riddance to the character. He kind of
Oh yeah,
deserved what he
for sure.
got.
Yes, but again, it's all part of the way the story. That sort of helps the story move along to places where we think that where you don't think it's going to go, and it goes there. I like the way they do that. And we continue hearing the narration, and Red says they transferred him to a minimum security hospital upstate, which again means nobody's really worried that he's going to be doing anything.
Right.
And then, to my knowledge, he lived out the rest of his life drinking his food through a straw. It's a nice way to show the way that the whole thing plays out.
Right.
I like it. And basically, one of the things I wanted to mention is the idea of what they talk about in the book about this, because the book does mention some of the things about what happens here, but Basically, in the book, it's not that someone beat him up. It's just that everyone knew that that he was protected by the guards, and that helps. Because again, the book, the novella does take place. It's slightly different because a lot of the characters in the prison itself change over the course of the 19 years that he's there. I think there's like three wardens in the book, and the captain of the guard changes also, things like that. I mean, there is a character named Hadley who they deal with. He's like the third set along with Norton as the warden. But they basically say that this all continues throughout the entire time.
Interesting.
And then the shot changes, and we see Red and all of his cohorts, his posse, looking out, watching the ambulance leave. And then Red says to the guys around him, and he goes, "I'm thinking Andy could use a nice welcome back when he gets out of the infirmary." So, it's a nice gesture on Red's part with the way that he's beginning this little idea, which we will expand on more tomorrow when we get
Indeed.
there. So, and that's the way this minute ends. So, Josh, did you have anything else you wanted to mention about this particular minute?
No, just I mentioned before that Clancy Brown plays Rawhide in Buckaroo Banzai. So it was neat to see Clancy in another role. And he looks really good in this film. I mean, this was the mid-90s, as we said earlier. It's about 10 years since Banzai. And he's at top of form at this time in his career.
Yes, definitely is. All right, so today's segment is called Main Man Monday, where my guests will give their top five Stephen King adaptations. So why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Number five. So I kind of had a tie between the two prison movies, between Shawshank and The Green Mile, kind of tied for five. I like them both. Kind of a different, I suppose, more uplifting version in The Green Mile versus Shawshank, but both very powerful films. So those would be my number five. Number four, I would say, was Misery. That one of the hardest hitting crazy films, with Kathy Bates and shoot,
James
who
Caan.
James, it was
James
James
Caan.
Caan,
James
that's right. For a second I was like, wait, was that James Caan? Yes, it was. And I remember that one won Academy Awards, didn't it? I think Kathy Bates got one for that one, didn't
Caan.
she?
Yeah. Kathy Bates won for that, yes.
That one was crazy. Number three, more of a classic, is probably The Shining, which I didn't see until way past when that one came out. I think I was in college when I first saw that the first time, and that one's just crazy. It also requires probably a couple of viewings to really catch everything that's going on there. Just that one scene where Jack says, "Here's Johnny." Oh, crazy. And then the other two, I like The Running Man, the Arnold Schwarzenegger one. I mean, yes, it's probably not the best work that Stephen King ever did, and very different, I'm sure, from the one that we see on film, but it's just fun. I remember watching that a couple of times as a kid and enjoying it.
Have you seen the remake that they
I
did
have
last year?
not. Yeah, I know they did a
Okay, so
remake recently, and I
okay.
didn't hear
So the
amazing things about it, so I haven't rushed out to see it, but I probably will one day.
understandable. So the remake is a lot closer to the story, The Running Man, that Stephen King wrote. The Schwarzenegger one is not connected at all to what they did in the book, except for the names of the characters and the fact that it's some sort of game show. That's about it.
What, they never mentioned the butcher from Bakersfield in that?
I don't believe that they do, but it is possible. I'm trying to remember. I don't think they do, but the 87 one is a lot flashier. So, you know, that, and I think it's a lot of fun also.
Yeah,
So
I'll have to catch
that
that
works.
one. But number one, as I think I mentioned at the top of the podcast, is Stand By Me. And that's one where I saw that on video when I was a kid and just thought it was a fun movie, mostly because it's about kids, so I could relate to it a little bit more. I think that a lot of people who like that movie like it because of all the callbacks to the 50s. And you know, they think about when they were kids, but I enjoyed it. And that's probably my number one.
All right, excellent. Okay, so now we will play the first of two games that we're going to play every day. This one's called Name That Novel Adaptation, and this is not
Oh,
only Stephen King. And
okay.
the idea here is that, for instance, this movie is based on a novel called Rita Hayworth and Shawshank Redemption,
Right.
and the movie's only called The Shawshank Redemption. So, you know, the idea is that they're, I will tell you the original name of the novel and the year that it came out. And you have to try the year the movie came out, and you have to try and guess what the movie is.
Oh boy.
Okay.
Okay.
And I can give you hints also along the way if you're interested. So
All right.
let's spin the wheel and see what you're gonna get.
Okay.
Round and round and around the wheel goes. So this is a movie that came out in 2011, and it was originally called Genesis.
2011 called Genesis. Of course, when you say Genesis, the first thing I think of is Star Trek, but that would have been a lot
Of
earlier.
course. Yes. That was 82.
Genesis. So something about creation. 2011? That wasn't like Deep Impact or something like that, was it?
No, that wasn't that. That came out in 98.
Oh.
98, yeah.
Oh, geez. I don't know. Is it a sci-fi film?
Yes, it
Interesting.
is.
2011. What would
And
it
it's a sci-fi film that we have a lot more information about because of COVID.
Oh. Oh. What? Outbreak? Let me see. Or no. No, I mean they did do a remake of Andromeda Strain, so. But one
Well,
of those.
Outbreak came out in 95, and
Okay.
Andromeda Strain
That was
remake, I think,
earlier,
came
yeah.
out in, yeah, it was like 2006, something like
But
that.
another movie about or
I mean,
Genesis.
this is okay. I'll give you a hint. This is part of a series that originally started in the late 60s and went through the 70s, and then it was rebooted once in the beginning of the 2000s, and then it was rebooted again in 2011, and the story that was used here is based on I believe a comic book that is called Genesis that takes the original idea and changes it so that it gives us something that
Oh,
feels a lot more
it's not Watchmen,
a
is it?
lot. No. Watchmen came out in 2000. Oh, Travis is going to kill me. I can't remember the what year.
I'm not sure then. It wasn't one of those
It
Fantastic Four
starts.
movies.
No. It stars James Franco. Does that help you?
Oh, is it Spider-Man, one of the Spider-Man movies?
No. It also stars Andy Serkis.
And Andy Serkis? I'm coming up blank. I'm gonna have to pass. What
Okay.
is it?
It was directed by Rupert Wyatt. Does that help at all?
Mm-mm.
Probably not. It is the reboot of Planet of the Apes, The Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, jeez. Okay. Didn't see that one. I did see the first of the remake of the Planet of the Apes that they did, but
That's this one. Oh, you're talking about
Was
the
it?
Mark Wahlberg one.
The Wahlberg one.
Wait, oh no, the Wahlberg one is not connected.
Yeah.
Right. No, so the idea here with this one is that, you know, there's a COVID-like strain that starts killing the population.
Oh, right,
You know,
yeah.
that was the, you know, and again, this is, was it 9 years before COVID?
Yeah.
So that was also a way to look at all those things.
Hmm.
All right. So now we will play the second game, which is called High Low, where I will give you the name of a Best Picture Oscar nominee from 1950 through now, and you have to try and guess what the IMDb score is and the Rotten Tomatoes score. And just to give you a bench line, so Shawshank is 9.3 IMDb, and it's a 91% on Rotten Tomatoes, which I'm still baffled that there are 9% of the reviewers out there that don't like the movie.
I seem to recall in the early days of IMDb that Shawshank was number one of all movies.
It still is. It still is.
Yeah.
All right, so let's spin the wheel and see what you get. All right, the 2022 Oscar winner, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Okay, that one I did see. So you want the IMDb rating?
Yes.
We'll say 8.7.
All right, and the Rotten Tomatoes.
92. I think that a lot of people like that one.
You are very close on both of those. So it's 8.4 and 94.
Ha! Look at that.
Nicely done. All right, very good. Very good. You got within the range. Right. Let's spin the wheel for your next one. All right, you got another Oscar winner, the Oscar winner from 1968, Oliver.
Oh, I saw that one with my kids not that long ago. Yeah, Ron Moody in that one as
Yes.
Fagin. Yeah, very good. Oh. I'm gonna say, maybe 8.3 on Rotten T or on IMDb, and I mean for Rotten Tomatoes, that's an older movie. I don't know, 85.
All right, you're closer on the Rotten Tomatoes. Rotten Tomatoes is 83, so it's very good. On the IMDb, it's a 7.4.
Huh. Okay. Yeah, I guess people these days can't relate to it as much.
Right, let's spin the wheel for your final one today. All right, the 1966 Steve McQueen film, The Sand Pebbles.
I hate to say I don't even know that film.
Okay.
So,
It's
not
all about
knowing
the
it,
Boxer Rebellion. It's
I'll
about the
just
Boxer Rebellion.
about the Boxer Rebellion. Huh, that was like in China? I'm trying to remember. Yeah. Oh geez. Well, just shooting out in the dark, we'll say 7.3 IMDb and 80 Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay, again, very close, 7.5 and 89. So
Okay.
it's pretty good.
All right.
Nicely done.
Oh,
Nicely
thank
done,
you.
Josh.
Thank you.
All right, so would you like to tell everyone where they can find you?
Yes, you can find me at joshhorowitz.com. Also, you can find me at the different podcasts that we're doing. 5 minutes of trouble.com is our latest new podcast that's coming up. We were discussing the film Big Trouble in Little China 5 minutes at a time. We did this over 10 years ago. But after a long hiatus, we're probably going to be doing a new episode because there was a 40th anniversary screening of the film just last night when we're recording this. This is quite something. They had like 20 different people who worked on the film come to the screening, and my co-host Brett Stillo and I were able to attend this event and do the Q&A interview that happened after the film. So we're going to try to see if we can put that up as a new episode of 5 Minutes of Trouble. So be on the lookout for that. And if you like the movie Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension, we did that one too. That's 5minutesofbanzai.com. And then finally, I was part of a group that did old-time radio dramas. That one is called 12 Chimes, It's Midnight. We did that many years ago. Hadn't done much lately, but the creator, Amy Pavi, has just released a new episode of 12 Chimes based on, I believe, an original play that she put on live and decided to record. And so I think that's going to be the next episode. So be sure to check that out at 12chimesradio.com. And the
All right.
last thing I'd want to mention, though, this is just kind of a fun side project I've been working on. I'm a huge fan of Indiana Jones. In fact, part of the reason I got into podcasting was because I was listening to the Indiana Jones Minute and got in touch with Pete Mummert, who's one of the co-hosts on that show, who got me in touch with Brett, and that's how we started doing 5 Minutes of Trouble. But I am in the process of doing a radio drama adaptation of Raiders of the Lost Ark. And we've already released two episodes. I'm still casting the third one, but it's based on the original screenplay of Raiders by Lawrence Kasdan and Philip Kaufman and George Lucas. And it's different than what we see in the film. There are some scenes there that never made it, some characters, but I'm taking the approach of going with this. So we've got a cast, we've got sound effects, we got music, and it's a lot of fun. You can listen for this. Right now it's up on YouTube if you just search for, I believe, Raiders radio drama. But I'm going to eventually turn this into a podcast. So be on the lookout for this. Should be a lot of fun.
Oh wow, very cool. Sounds like it.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to listening to that. All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@moviearound.net. So Josh, Josh and I will be back again tomorrow. But
Tomorrow.
until then, get busy living.
Or get busy dying.